Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.
You would be on this rather confused day in Los Angeles, April 23rd. It's trying to figure out if it wants to rain or doesn't want to rain.
Can't decide what it wants to be.
Yeah.
Sort of like me, Michael.
Really?
And now that we've brought that up, I'd like to recite some original poetry I've prepared.
Really? We're going to go there?
Yes.
So
yes,
soon?
Yes. No, it is. It's one of those gray days. One of those gray days. But I love, like my wife says about being from Chicago, as she is, her thing is another damn sunny day. That's her thing about living in Southern California.
Really?
Another damn sunny day. So things like this.
But she's saying that in jest, right?
Oh, well, no, she's tired of it. Anything, you know, I told you about when I met Peter Riegert, actor Peter Riegert, phenomenal actor. And he told me what living in L.A. is like. He's like, there's no sense of the passing of time because every day is the same. He said, so this is living in Los Angeles. He goes, you make a drink, you go down to the pool, and then you're 80. And I never really realized what he meant until I was here a couple of years. Because, you know, you find yourself saying things like, you remember last year? Oh, wait, that was 13 years ago.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just find yourself doing stuff like that. Anyway, Michael,
well,
it's great to be here. I'm very, very excited. Very, very excited.
I know.
Too much talent for one room today.
A wonderful show today.
Yeah.
How was your week, though, before we get into all of this?
Let me thank the sponsors
real quick,
and
we'll
then we'll
that.
Go right into that.
Sure.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listening sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Throw some applause their way.
Absolutely.
Two guests today, for those of you that remember that old commercial. I'm dating myself there.
Hands up here. I was quite young.
Were you?
No.
Were you? What color is the sky in your world, Michael? Two guests. If I begin to start reading their collective credits, we'll be here until Labor Day, so I'm not going to try. Joining us in the studio shortly, a four-time Emmy nominee and man widely considered to be one of the most gifted comic actors working today. You've seen him in everything from the masterful Christopher Guest films to Modern Family to The Tonight Show, where he appeared over 100 times, and we're going to let you know where you can see him live next week. On my personal Mount Rushmore of funny, this man is Abraham Lincoln. Please welcome Fred Willard.
Thank you.
Hello, sir.
Thank you, and thank you, audience. That's I'm a five-time nominee. I just was nominated for a daytime Emmy.
Really?
For Bold and the Beautiful.
You were nominated
Isn't
for Bold
that wonderful?
So
yes.
Five times. Five times.
Yes, this is a daytime Emmy, though.
Oh, okay. Well, hey,
well,
an Emmy
still
is,
counts.
An Emmy is an Emmy.
Is an Emmy. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It's an Emmy. It's
Absolutely.
An Emmy.
Five more than I've been nominated for.
And joining us later in the hour, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most sought-after vocalists working today, long considered one of the master interpreters of American opera. She excels in a wide range of musical styles with recent solo appearances with the Paris Symphony, the LA Philharmonic, and the Seattle Symphony, among scores of others. Please welcome a multiple award-winning force of nature currently burning it down, or rather chopping it up, in Sweeney Todd at the El Portal Theater. Allison England is here.
Hi. Hello.
How are you, Allison?
I'm great. It's
good.
So great to be here
nice
with both of you and Fred and Mr. Willard. And
so nice to have you back. We had you sort of indirectly on the show before. You had to call in.
Yes,
because you
exactly.
Had too many
I remember
things on your
from
dance
a costume
part.
Shop.
Really?
From a fitting, and I was being fitted and talking to you at the same time.
Tell you. That's a lot of plates.
An actor's life for me.
Well, looking forward to it.
So before we talk to Fred and to Allison.
Yes.
As I started to say, how was your week?
My week was great. Yeah. We opened last weekend with Mary Poppins at the Cabrillo Music Theater, and it's just kicking butt and taking names.
You can.
There are some tickets left.
Can't imagine the night
performances, but and that's an 1,800 seat venue.
Yes,
out there.
It is.
And screaming, standing ovations couldn't be received better. We did a show yesterday at 10:30 performance for kids from Title I schools here in LA. In underserved communities, and it was packed, 1,800 kids. And I tell you, when Mary Poppins comes out and there's 1,800 kids, it might as well be the Beatles at Shea Stadium. I mean, it was just the roof came off the place. It was and that was for the curtain call. A lot of these kids had never been to a play before. A lot of these young kids had never been to a play before. So to be able to provide this first one for so many of them was just a joy beyond measure.
I'm sure.
It was an absolute blast.
And, of course, the perfect actress singer in that role being Juliana Hanson.
Yes.
Who was with us a couple weeks ago in the role of Mary Poppins. So how great was that? And then you did something for Richard Sherman, I understand.
There was a benefit for Richard Sherman. When he was there on opening night. One of the original composers of Mary Poppins was there. And Juliana sang for along with Wesley Alfin, who plays our Bert, who is another
lovely man,
phenomenal guy.
Yes.
And that was on Sunday night. Juliana, I don't know how she... She's like the Energizer Bunny. She opens in Mary Poppins, and then on Sunday night she's got this thing for Richard Sherman, and then you saw her on Monday night.
I was
at your Starry Night, right?
Yes, One Starry Night, which was a benefit performance dedicated to conquering ALS, and it was at the Pasadena Playhouse, and so beautifully done. And Juliana is one of the has co-conceived this idea and also co-produced it. And it's called One Starry Night, as I said, and listen to who I was there on behalf of Broadway World Television, doing interviews on the red carpet. Ed Asner, Brent Barrett from Broadway, Petula Clark.
Oh, my golly.
Who I had a beautiful little reunion with because we worked together years ago at the Waldorf Astoria. And Mickey Dolenz and Juliana, of course, Devin Kelly, Jean Louisa Kelly, Norm Lewis from Broadway, very funny comedian, Wendy Liebman.
Oh, yes, very funny. Followed her for years.
Funny. Yeah. Kate Linder from The Young and the Restless, Lisa Livesey from Wicked, and who else? Melissa Manchester.
What
classy lady that she is. George Newbern, who's on the series Scandal right now. Carrie O'Malley from Broadway. So many people. Eric Peterson, who created the role of Shrek in the Broadway musical Shrek, did a bang-up job. What a great singer. I've never heard him sing before because I didn't see the Broadway version. I saw it here in Los Angeles, and he was not in it at that time. Jenna Leah Rosen, young 16-year-old girl that performs at my nightclub every once in a while and is so fantastic. Jason Ritter, John Ritter's son. Richard Sherman was there, Bruce Valanche, and my new girlfriend, Renee Zellweger.
Really?
She and I had quite a little nice little chat off camera.
Really? Really?
It was beautiful.
Is that a topic for another show?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It really
that sounds like quite the busy red carpet.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And they raised over $200,000, more importantly, for the research for ALS.
Yeah.
And it was a
horrible disease.
Yes, it is. Yeah. One that people don't know too much about because it kind of creeps up on you, it affects your brain and your muscles and not a nice thing to have by any stretch of the imagination. And to support ALS, at least here in California and Hawaii, there is a chapter called Golden West Chapter, and you'll find that on the internet very easily. And it is the ALS Association. So please reach out. And if you don't understand this disease, that's a place to go there and learn something about it and then do something about it.
And we will throw that URL, that web address out a couple more times before the end of the hour if you happen to miss it just then, unless if you're listening to us live. You can always listen to the podcast a little later.
So I had that, and then I went and reviewed a piece of theater at the Colony Theater, which we'll talk about later.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Michael, would you give the gentleman to your left the intro he is so due?
With great pleasure. Celebrity Autobiography is back at the Grammy Museum by popular demand, as seen on Bravo TV, a night of nonstop laughter and jaw-dropping vignettes inspired and torn straight from the pages of the most unforgettable music autobiographies, tell-alls, and more. Celebrity Autobiography has been profiled in virtually every major media outlet, including The Today Show, Nightline, CBS Sunday Morning, CNN, NPR's All Things Considered, and The View. Our first guest will be one of those bringing these works to life this coming Wednesday at the Grammy Museum. He is an alumni of the Second City a founding member of the classic improv group, the Ace Trucking Company, recipient of the American Comedy Award, the Boston Film Critics Award, the Sierra Award, and a man with over 1,000 episodes of television under his belt, not to mention Academy Award-winning films.
And please, 16 Emmy nominations.
16.
Yes, nominations. I had the number wrong.
Yes. Please welcome Fred Willard.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. ladies Willard. And gentlemen. It's a funny story about the Boston Film Critics Award. One of my college roommates is from Boston, and he's not in show business. And I was talking to him when I think Best in Show came out, and I said I won the Boston Critics Award. And there was a long pause. He says, "Now, Fred, exactly what is that?" And I said, "Well, let me explain." So it's wonderful. We all live in a world.
Right.
The average person doesn't care or doesn't know.
Well, I was telling Fred when he came in, we were speaking in the green room before he came in. I wanted to thank him on the air about this. We actually met 15 years ago.
Really?
Very, very briefly. Backstage at Smothers Brothers. We're at the, was it a comedy store, Fred? Is that what you said?
I remember seeing the Smothers at the comedy store, yes.
And our friend, also our mutual friend, Dennis McCallion, Rick Marcelli, mm-hmm. Hooked me up with tickets for that. And I went backstage, and I was me in a room with Fred Willard and the Smothers Brothers. And talking about, I had told Fred about a show that I had just started then called Renaissance Geek, which became Straight Up With a Twist and was very successful for me. And it's a pleasure, Fred, to be able to thank you for the kind words from 15 years ago.
Oh, well,
your encouragement and how wonderful it was speaking with you. It's nice to meet you again.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It was really, absolutely.
Really,
you know, whenever Paul says the name of the show that he was doing when he met you, Renaissance Geek.
Which became Straight Up With a Twist.
Right. The tagline was, "You know the world's a cruel place when you're a straight guy with good eye for color."
Yeah. Oh. Good taste and great eye for color. And it was, you know, it predated that whole metrosexual thing. It was about 3 years before Queer Eye for the Straight Guy hit. And
wow.
Just rode that wave of metrosexuality for
how many performances of that did you do?
1,400.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah.
But speaking of performances, I have to ask about this celebrity autobiography thing. Because this is one of these things when if you were, like, Ernie Kovacs used to do this thing called the Nairobi Trio, this mm-hmm. great bit with three guys in ape costumes, mm-hmm. ape masks. And it's one of those things, it's three guys in ape costumes. That's pretty much it. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And to describe it to someone, you have no idea why it's funny. And I know that the celebrity autobiography thing is such a hit everywhere it goes. But to describe this to someone and say, you know what, we're going to go up there and we're going to read sections from We're Celebrities, but we're going to read other selections from autobiographies. Why do you think it connects so much with people? Do you think it's our celebrity-obsessed culture?
It is partly that, and partly because what we pick out autobiographies. A lot of these celebrities write autobiographies aiming at their own crowd.
Right.
And when it's read to the general public, who may not be a huge fan of Justin Bieber or Sylvester Stallone, it can get very ironic and very funny. And we were always told to read it fairly straight, not to do to act it out funny. Just let it come out in their own words.
Right.
In fact, that's one of the titles of the show, in their own words. So I've been doing it for several years. It started in a little restaurant on La Brea. Now we've done it in San Francisco. They do it in New York. I've never done it in New York. They do it all over the country. And it does, it strikes a note with everyone. And the wonderful thing about it, you can get a lot of people who you ordinarily wouldn't get because we just read the book.
We come out
and read it. It's 4 or 5 minutes. You read it. You step down. Someone else comes up. So they've had, I've worked with Lorraine Newman.
It's terrific.
Who else? Will Forte.
Will Forte. And the number of people in this production here. You have Eugene Pack, Lorraine Newman, Ralph Macchio is doing this one, Kristen mm-hmm. Johnson, Roger Bart, who's been a guest on this show before, Pamela Adlin, Steven Weber from Wings as well.
Just found out that Blondie,
Debbie Harry.
The show. Yeah. I'm excited about that because I've never worked with her, and I'm a big fan of Blondie.
Wow. Do you? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the reason they probably have Blondie, because we're doing it at the Grammy Theater. And if they do it at like the Grammy Theater, they want to gear it towards music.
Right, right.
And we've done benefits for, you know, animal charities. So they, maybe a biography of someone written about their pets.
Okay.
And a story about their pet always becomes about them.
So this has been, how many times have you done it?
I must have done it 20 times.
Really?
And it's always fun because it's easy. You go in and you just read. I've done David Hasselhoff, Justin Bieber. My favorite to do is, they always close with dueling autobiographies, Debbie Reynolds, Elizabeth Taylor, and Eddie Fisher. Oh. And I get to do Richard Burton. I don't usually do dialects.
Right.
But I think I can be Richard Burton pretty well. Elizabeth. So that's always fun for me. And I always feel a little hurt if I come in, they say, Fred, you're not doing a
you're not doing the bird.
But you are doing Justin Bieber.
I didn't know he was old enough to even write an autobiography.
Justin Bieber is not only old enough, he has, we've done stuff from his second autobiography.
Are you serious?
And it's very fun. And that's the perfect thing.
Too.
He gears it at his, you know, his teenage girl audience.
Right.
But when you're in an adult crowd reading about his, and then the, one of the boy groups, you know, they'll read about their most embarrassing moments. It's very funny.
Right, right.
And they're all so, it's all so silly.
And because the world that they live in, the bubble that they live in.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember at one of the roasts, one of the Comedy Central roasts, B. Arthur was on the dais. And she just went up there, and her entire bit was reading Pamela Anderson's, a section of Pamela Anderson's autobiography, and she burned the place down. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Of course, Bea Arthur, as always, as one of the great dry, you know, comedian, you know, great dry comic voices, but it was absolutely hysterical.
You know who is a real, I'm a fan of, that's going to be in your cast is Kristen Johnson. Have you worked with her before?
No. Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I did once.
I've loved her ever since she was on Third Rock from the
Sun. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she's great.
She's amazing.
Have you seen Music and Lyrics? That
yes,
she
I
did.
Have.
She was brilliant in that.
Oh, I'm
brilliant.
Sorry. No, I didn't. I thought you were referring to something else. Yeah. No, I'd love to see her.
Jeez. And what, Fred, you were saying about the people that can come to this because the obligation is so, you know, it's not a long rehearsal process.
No.
And the people go up and they read and they do different. During the course of the evening, how many different autobiographies would you
read? I would say four on a good night.
Okay.
Four.
And you just, and not sequentially, just rotating.
No,
up
just saying, now let's bring it up to the stage. Bring back Lorraine Newman and Fred Willard.
Okay.
And the crowd is so responsive, so it's wonderful for your ego. You get huge laughs.
Right.
And you think, oh my gosh, it's, what am I doing this for? Why am I out doing stand-up? This audience loves me.
Right.
So it's an actor's dream. And the Grammy Theater, if anyone hasn't been there, it's wonderful. There's musical displays all through the place. They have, I think now they're featuring Ringo Starr's, you know, his costumes he wore. And
oh, like a gallery
Beatles.
As you
it's
walk in?
It's wonderful, and it's not a huge room either.
Right.
The high point of my going there as an audience is seeing Lisa Marie Presley. Lisa Wes was Elvis' daughter, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
She, with her band.
Jackson.
And it was just, we were sitting with, you know, right there, and it's not a huge auditorium.
I tell you something, Lights Out, her song from about 5-6 years ago, truly a great, it would be a great rock and roll song if it wasn't Lisa Marie Presley. It didn't hinge on that, but that was a real barn burner of a song.
Yeah.
That was probably what she was promoting when you saw her.
It could have been, yeah.
Were you an Elvis fan?
Oh, huge Elvis fan. In fact, my wife wrote a play called Elvis and Juliet where I played an Elvis impersonator. But I was a fan of him in his early years, 54, 55, 56.
Yeah.
Then a few of his later things, but he was,
I recently interviewed for Broadway World Television Priscilla Presley.
Oh.
Had an opening, and you know she looks just the same.
Uh-huh.
So beautiful. Yeah. And so lovely and so gracious.
Yeah.
Very
I've
interesting.
Heard that about her.
Yeah,
I've heard that about
her. She doesn't go out very often, but that was a night. So,
Mr. Willard, I have to ask you briefly about the Christopher Guest films because I have a lot of friends listening today, and they would be very angry with me if I didn't. And I'm very curious about something in the assembly of those films because anyone who's familiar with the filmmaking knows about continuity and narrative and how do they put things together and cutting things together after the fact. And I'm just really curious about the process when you are doing films like that, where so much of it is improvisational, so much of it is extemporaneous. If something works, does Mr. Guest have you do it again to hone, to polish, or is it new every time?
It's new every time. His first few films, he would do he'd do one take, then he'd go back and say, "Okay, let's do it again." And I would say to him, "Well, I had some pretty good jokes there. Do I repeat them?" And he was not very much help. It's, well, do whatever you want to do. But so after a while, what you do is anything that comes through your mind, say it and do it. If he doesn't like it, it won't be in. And you feel silly because you are pretty much improvising, although you know exactly what you're doing in it. It's a structure.
So he gives you like beats.
You know exactly what the scene is about. And just go ahead. Like we're doing here. We're not on a script, but you have to talk to me about this and that. And he'll film hours and hours and then cut out what he doesn't like. And sometimes it hurts because you say, "Why did you cut that out? This is the best." Well, it didn't move the film forward.
So all of that stuff, for example, there's so many films to pull from. But, for example, The Mighty Wind, your personal history of, hey, what happened, your television history.
Yes.
Just completely, that's all you.
He just comes in, he tells you who your character is, and I always got to add to the character a little and make it my own. And it just, the camera starts rolling, action.
Oh, wow.
And you're on your own, and occasionally he might, after one take, he might say, "All right, do it again," and just stress that and leave that something out that doesn't fit in the script. Oh, okay. Yeah. And then it's very, very... very brief, and then they move on. And then his latest thing, the last thing I did was Family Tree for HBO. Oh. And now there's a huge crew, and now they're, close up over the shoulder shot, a two shot, a cutaway. So I think he's going more. People ask me, is he doing anything new now? I don't know, but I think if he does, it'll be back more to just regular filmmaking, more scripted.
Right.
I think he'll always enjoy a little improv because he gets wonderful. Catherine O'Hara will come up with something better than 10 writers can come up with for Levy. So just let them say what they're going to say and then kind of mold it into the script.
The Chinese restaurant scene in Guffman is one of the greatest, one of the funniest pieces of film I've ever seen. I mean, Catherine O'Hara doing truly one of the great drunks of all time.
And she was drinking the wine one, and Chris was off camera saying, "Drain the glass, drain the glass." So she had to drain the whole glass. And after he said cut, she said, "Chris, that's really wine. It wasn't ginger ale."
Oh, man. For a celebrity biography, do you have much rehearsal?
No, none at all.
None at all.
You find just out of nervousness, you'll sit there in the green room reading it out. So you don't want to fluff and, you try to be smooth and put on a character. And so there's no rehearsal. You arrive, an hour ahead of time. Sometimes if you get there 20 minutes ahead of time, it's okay. Well, they're on the phone. "Where's John? Is he okay? We're ready to go." And the only rehearsal, you go down, you have to see where you'll stand at the microphone. So you want it to be smooth.
Right.
And you don't want to make it just a laugh fest where the actors are laughing themselves. Well, try to do it professionally and let the audience, let the laughter just come from the book.
Would.
And the only thing I regret, several years ago, I read a Wayne Newton autobiography, and I took it to him, and I said, "I'd love to read this." And it's some wonderful things Wayne Newton talking about. Elvis called me and said, "Now I'm passing the mantle on to you." Just self-serving.
right.
And we did it, and he never asked me to do it again. So I said, maybe I should bring it up again. I still have the autobiography.
That brings up a good point, because you think about it's not only what the person is saying, but also it's so much about the literary style and the time that the autobiography was written.
Yes.
Because of what was, what the world was like at the time that that biography was written could be, 15 years of time could make something really sound like purple prose after that.
Yeah, yeah. The oldest one we did was Hedy Lamarr, which I love, but how many people know Hedy Lamarr?
Right.
But people, we don't get a kid's audience. We get 19-year-olds.
Right.
All people are familiar with, they know Elizabeth Taylor, they know Richard Burton. And they know Justin Bieber, and the fun is
amazing.
Me doing Justin Bieber and trying to act like a little kid. Wow, what a trip that was! 300. But I try not to make fun of them, and they try. Eugene Pack, who runs it, makes an announcement that we're not making fun of them; we're just doing it as a tribute. And I always say, I wish I were as successful as some of the people I'm making. I'm reading.
Do you have an autobiography?
No, I don't.
You haven't written an autobiography.
I told Eugene I enjoyed it. I said I will write an autobiography, but you've got to do it. Show.
Well, I'll read it.
There you go.
I'll read it.
Well, what we'll do, they will have a man read a woman's autobiography, or a woman read a Sylvester Stallone. It's just
there you go.
It's very funny. Yeah.
We're talking about the Celebrity Autobiography, the Music Edition, Volume 5. This will be Wednesday, April 29th at 8 o'clock p.m. This is at the Grammy Museum.
Yes, it was right down near Staples Center, a very vibrant area. And an added thing for people who go there, right up the street there's the Hotel Figueroa. Mm-hmm. 1926 it was built. The last time I went, I said to my friends, let's go to the Hotel Figaro. Oh, Fred, no. It's an you go, you pass through the lobby, you go in the back, there's an outdoor pool, you sit by the bar, by the pool, you get your own drinks, there's candle.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to that, more so than doing the damn show.
This is the, it's within the whole LA Live.
It's one block away.
From the LA Live.
It's the kind of old hotel that they wanted to tear down 50 years ago, but it's still there.
And there's so little of that in LA.
Oh, yeah.
We need to embrace that.
It's actually at 800 West Olympic Boulevard, folks, in Suite A245 in Los Angeles.
What's that, the Grammy
Museum?
Yeah. Well, you got to get down there and figure out where you are.
But there's so much to do down there. Get down there early, park. For tickets, go to GrammyMuseum.org, or you could also call 213-765-6803. And, of course, we will throw this information out there a couple more times before the end of that. Yeah. But we'll always say that for these for LA audiences, get there early, park, have that behind you. And because the other thing too, there's so few places in town where you can go to one location and walk to different things, as you just mentioned. Unless you're in West Hollywood or in Santa Monica or some areas of NoHo, there's really not a lot of that offered.
That's an exciting area though. Mm-hmm. Those huge neon lights.
I was down there. I saw Leonard Cohen at LA Live, and my wife wouldn't go with me because Leonard Cohen does not appeal to her. I could listen to Leonard Cohen read the phone book, but she's
she'll
like,
read
why
the
don't
biography.
You just go? Yeah, she will. Okay. She'll read Leonard Cohen's biography. Michael, we should get your review in here briefly before we talk to Allison and continue to talk to Fred here.
Yes,
you
thank
share
you.
Share your experiences as an active theater goer?
I do, actually. I had the pleasure of going to the opening of the Los Angeles premiere of Words by Ira Gershwin, a musical play by Joseph Vass, directed by David Ellenstein, musical director Kevin Tony, musical arranger Joseph Vass. And it is currently on stage at the beautiful Colony Theater in Burbank, and it plays through Sunday, May 17th. Now, this is a different kind of a project because it's involving a musical person, but it is a play with music. And the gentleman that portrays Mr. Gershwin is Jake Broder, and the singers who come out to actualize the music, and Jake also does some of the song, is Elijah Rock and Angela Teake. You might remember her from the original Star Search, actually. Mm. A wonderful, wonderful singer. Both of them wonderful, wonderful singers. And they just kind of come in and out of the story that Gershwin is telling, who's comfortably sitting in a beautiful red leather chair on stage, and they kind of, and the orchestra is behind. And they come out and do these amazing renditions of these numbers. And then he gets involved. Sometimes they do a trio of the material. But it's you learn a great deal about Mr. Gershwin, and a lot of things that people don't know about him, and his trials and tribulations and his success, and the success of his brother, of course, too, who passed away at a very early age. And it's totally fascinating. It is a world premiere, and I think if you have any respect for the best American music, this is a play you should probably go and see.
You said that gleefully.
I do, because I get excited when I hear something by Ira Gershwin or the likes of Gershwin, Cole Porter, or any of those gentlemen, Harold Arlen, any of them.
Oh.
That to me is music.
And another thing about the Colony, as a theater goer, it's a very comfortable theater.
Beautiful.
And free parking, you pull right in it, and closed parking, you can park
walk right in.
50 feet That's from right. the theater and walk in. So,
sit right
Fred,
down.
Would you be our correspondent for just live theater? You can just go to theater
and
report
yes.
back for us.
Give me my first
Let us know where the parking is good.
The parking,
get a great martini.
Stunk, but it's worth going. The parking, there's no parking,
I'll
but
food.
I'll tell you, their candy, the candy counter.
I got to tell you, the play was dog shit, but the sweet potato fries at the bar next door was beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful.
I want to give one quick shout-out, Paul, to a production that's at the Glendale Center Theater, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels,
yes.
being directed by Randy Brenner and starring Justin Michael Wilcox.
I've done a lot of work there.
Yeah,
hysterical.
It's a brand new title at that theater, yeah. the Glendale Center Theater, In the Round, folks, and it plays for the next week. So it's already been in production for a couple weeks. But check it out.
That's great. That's great. Chimp in a Suit. Great song from that musical. Chimp in a Suit.
Oh,
you know?
I've never seen the show.
Soon to be one of my audition pieces.
Really?
Just because I've often been called
There's
that.
Great parking at Glendale Center
You know, that's
Theater,
what I
and
hear.
There's Porto's, too, guys.
There is.
Porto's.
And Damon's.
Damon's, yeah.
Fred runs a hot dog
ball.
Cart right there. He's got it right there.
Discounts for theater goers.
So he has the finger on the pulse beat of all of this. Regarding her current role as Mrs. Lovett, our next guest was called Supremely Divalicious by Stage Scene LA. LA Weekly says she secures the limelight, radiating a glittering comic menace with her manic stares and scintillating vocals. She has performed at Lincoln Center, the Kennedy Center, Radio City Music Hall, Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Oh, if you only could find some nice venues. And with theater and opera companies all over the world. But you can see her up close and personal in the intimate staging of the Sondheim classic Sweeney Todd in the El Portal's Monroe Forum Theater. Don't miss a performance that Steve Stanley calls a world-class performance that equals perfection. We are delighted to have back to State of the Arts the incredible Alison England.
Yay! Thank you.
How are you?
I'm happy.
Mrs. Lovett.
Yes, dear.
In a space, for those
that's,
of you who haven't been...
That's as tiny as this, dear.
Yeah.
Right here.
So you're, I mean, it, and that's a not a round, but it's like a thrust,
it's
right?
Quarter. It's like a three-quarter. It's a three-quarter,
stage. There could be many configurations, actually, but they have
they have it. I have never seen it except for the three-quarter. Right. And you're right up at, like, I'm this close. I could be even closer to Fred like this.
Yeah.
And
called the Monroe Theater because of Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe?
Because Marilyn Monroe went to that theater as a child to see movies when it was a cinema.
And she went to school right behind
right
it,
behind
right?
It, yeah.
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 And Cher used to be a ticket taker there. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah.
I have a great Cher story.
Do you?
When
Share
my story about Cher. Well, my second husband, did we already talk about the first? Anyway, God,
well, you
let's
prepared
not,
the slideshow that we
yes,
watched before.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, when I was in college, we had this professional singing group, and they would pick from the college group. Okay, so she was dating Gene Simmons. And we got called to the studio. Stevie Wonder used to... Where was that studio? Anyway, huge, down in Hollywood. You know, the board is as big as Los Angeles. And
Sunset Sound?
Something like that.
Yeah, okay.
It'll come to me like tomorrow while I'm sitting by the pool turning 80.
Call in. Okay.
Right. Anyway, so we went to the studio, all of us who are 18 years old, and Gene is doing this... you know, tune called Tunnel of Love.
Okay.
And we're supposed to improvise. And Cher was his girlfriend, and there she was, right? And then he hired us to go to the Beverly Hills Hotel while on her birthday day. And he had a plane flying over that said, I love you, Cher. And we knocked on the door simultaneously as the plane is going over. And we're saying, happy birthday to you, you know. And she's like, comes in this like a T-shirt.
Right, right.
No, she didn't expect it. So it was like, holy crap, here are 50 people going, oh, you know. And
oh, there were that many. There were that many.
Yeah, okay. I mean, he hired all of us. I actually got hired and stayed on that gig. It was me, Gene Simmons, Cher, and two background singers out of New York. And you can go now on YouTube and hear me in the background singing way high on all his rock tunes, baby.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's my daughter. That's the only thing she likes about me. She's 18. All right, well, I like her because she was on a Gene Simmons record. That's it.
And it was Kiss? It wasn't when Gene Simmons was
It was Kiss.
Like
No, it was Kiss. Remember when they split up and they were doing solo albums?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that was his solo album. Oh.
When they did the four albums
exact.
With all their faces.
You
yes.
got it.
Yes. Well, what a complete turnaround from
Mrs. Lovett.
Yeah, exactly that. But I was going to say about Cher with Gene yeah. Simmons to Sonny.
Was it
a big departure?
Oh, yeah. And then, well, it was Sonny and then Gene Simmons and then Greg Allman for years. Right? She was with Greg Allman
yeah.
for a while. Yeah. I've actually got her list of people.
Do so you have? I was going to say it's become the Cher show. The Fred and Cher show. And I'm in the background going, hello, dear.
Back to Mrs. Love. Had
yes.
you
no.
never played the role before?
No.
No.
And I know that Mr. Willard gets this. When you know you're destined to play something and you finally play it, it's not even like you're trying. It's just like it was meant for you to step into, and that's exactly how I feel about Nellie Lovett.
Really?
I adore her. Right. And I bring some edge to it because I have a very special spin on her. She's not just like that. She's not.
Oh, no. And the thing is, I don't know if in a space that intimate, I mean, something like people couldn't see, but you just sort of had like a sort of a quirky kind of a wacky expression on mm-hmm. your face. There was some people have gone with that and productions I've seen of it. But I would imagine that when you're playing a venue that small,
that's great.
You're not going to, you can't do anything beyond intimate. I mean,
it's yeah. brilliant. And that's why
it
you
still it down. Yes,
when you want to see Sweeney up close, it's just, some people who have never seen it are, they're shocked. Right. You know, because it's mm-hmm. really right close to you.
Right.
And opening night, I have a very, very, very handsome Sweeney Todd. I'm sorry. I've been divorced since 2011, and he's got my heart, you know, working.
Yeah, but don't you think the tattoo's a bit much? I mean, it's
yes,
just me.
Yes, yes. Well, he's got a tattoo on the back of his neck, Fred, that says Made in Japan. I would like, well, I won't go there since we're on the radio.
Okay.
But anyway, we were sitting there, and I was singing Wait, which is a great moment. It means the only time Lovett sings something that's not blah, 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 blah. Yep. Everything about me is blah, blah, blah. And I just got this inspiration, and at the very end, I just reached down, and I bit his ear. I took his ear, and it was perfect.
Wow.
It just sat it up. It was just perfect. So
which
I hope
is a perfect example of something that would be totally lost in a large venue.
You can't unless you're right up close. Right,
right. Right.
So it's almost like the beautiful camera work you can do.
Douglas
Ladnier, but it's Ladnier in French. And since I'm French, you know.
He is a little younger than one would expect to see someone playing
yes,
many times.
But he's been working on that role for about 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
He was working on playing it?
He was in Chicago.
Yes, I know
at the
that.
Lyric there doing mm-hmm. Sweeney Todd in the ensemble and some other, you know how the ensemble is really not an ensemble in this piece. They're all soloists. And so he's watched people, Richard North, Len Carew, he's watched all of these people while he was in the ensemble, and he's just been waiting to do it. And he's also did it at the Norris Theater.
Yeah,
yes. Down in Valley High somewhere. I mean, it's so far away. Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
You know, I can't tell you how nice it is to hear something like that, because I have this thing that, and Michael, I'll probably sound like a broken record to Michael, but with the way our world is going, with the way how, you know, everyone has the attention span of a ferret on six Frappuccinos.
What's your name?
No one trusts subtlety anymore. No, because everything is so bombastic. We're assaulted with the internet. We're assaulted by advertising everywhere we go. So to hear things like this, and it goes back to the style of comedy from the Christopher Guest films, that trusting small, trusting silences, trusting all of that, rather than just being so assaultive with our presentation. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to love it. That I mean, you really have to just tuck that in.
Yes, that was very good, dear.
I tripped over that, but I made it work.
Do you know I filmed Unusual Suspects on Discovery Investigation about 4 months ago, and I was thinking about what Fred just said. They basically gave us the setup. They said you have to have this in the scene, and then we filmed it.
What did you say,
and guys? It was Unusual Suspects.
Okay,
and it was so brilliant. I bet you love that. Always yeah. doing that yeah. because then you're right present. And right. I feel even in Sweeney, we've got the script, but there are moments because the audience is breathing with us that we can take
you know, it's 99 Theater.
Yeah, right.
It's brilliant work. You
and
know?
What opportunity do people have to see this show in a space like that?
Well, I mean, soon to be gone. Yes. The vote is out, guys. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I don't know how that's going to affect that.
Well, that, of course, but I'm speaking also in terms of just the fact that very few people mount a musical of this ilk in
a small space.
Space.
And we don't have any mics, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're all mic'd now. As actors and singers, I mean, I was never mic'd in 5,000-seat house with 80-piece orchestra. That's why, you know, I study, so that you can honk it out there. Even Angela and people that, you know, that was never on mic. Now we're in the age of mic.
Right.
This is not on mic. Everything you heard when you came, Michael.
And how big, what's the instrumentation? How big is the
We just have piano
just
and flute.
Just a piano. But it's beautiful.
Really?
It's perfect for this production.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a very moody theater, the little theater.
You're
the
so right.
So it's perfect for that. And I was once in the company of about 9 or 10 Broadway musical people, and we went around the room, what is your favorite play? And I was amazed. Everyone said Sweeney Todd.
Really?
Yeah. And Rebecca Luker was one of them, and I'd just seen her in Music Man, and I got done praising her. I said, I thought she'd say Music Man, because that was my favorite. Hers was also Sweeney Todd.
It was really a game changer, Sweeney Todd, because, you know, I was very blessed to grow up in Connecticut, and I graduated from high school in 1982, and I had people who, in my school, an incredible theater teacher named Joan Voss, who took us into the city often. And at that particular point, I got to see Sweeney Todd with Len Carreyrou and Angela Lansbury. I got to see Evita with Patti LuPone and Bob Gunton and Mandy Patinkin. I got to see the original cast of Chess. I got to see Runaways.
Fantastic.
So many. I saw the Amadeus with Ian McKellen and Tim Curry and Jane Seymour, the original cast of Amadeus. So just seeing things like that. I mean, I knew the gift that I had when I had it, though. I knew while I was experiencing it, like, I'm writing this shit down because I gotta remember this.
What you didn't know is that you would be in Mary Poppins.
Yes,
exactly.
All these years later,
in a leotard.
We don't talk about that on the air.
I want to see the leotard.
Okay,
we all do.
There's a leotard. There's a leotard, and it's
look at the size of those hands.
That's it.
All right,
people in the front row are throwing me sandwiches.
Yeah,
Alice.
Yes,
I must say I've seen Sweeney Todd on Broadway and other productions of it, but. This production that you're in, and I'm not saying that because you're sitting here with us today, but you actually steal this production.
Oh, you, well, thank you.
It is really your show. And in all due respect to Douglas, who does an amazing job.
Voice,
and beautiful voice. But you are riveting. I certainly couldn't take my eyes off of you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, the famous story about Angela Lansbury, when Stephen called her in her hotel room and said, we're giving you the role. And she said, that's wonderful. There's one problem. The title of the show is Sweeney Todd, and it should be Mrs. Lovett. And that's the truth, because she has the ideas. She's the neck that turns the head of Sweeney Todd. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, everything that's placed in that show is she's the comic relief under a huge, like Fred said, dark thing that's going on, and people think she's so fun, but she's also the one that has the idea about putting everybody in a pie.
Oh, she's Lady Macbeth.
Oh, yeah. It's so great, though, to play that. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love it. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
We have to tell people how they can see it.
Yes.
It is, as we mentioned, it's at the Monroe Forum Theater. That, of course, is within the beautiful El Portal Theater, 5269 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood. And for tickets, it's 818-508-4200, or you can visit www.elportaltheater.com. And theater, in this case, has the E-R spelling, which normally it's the R-E spelling. So elportaltheater.com. And once again, we'll throw that.
And you know, one of our dear friends directed this production,
Kristen
Towers-Rolls, who is the granddaughter of Catherine Grayson. She's a beautiful girl. She's been on the show.
She's amazing.
Hardest working women in show business.
And
yes,
you know what?
Is.
She took some chances, guys.
Yeah.
And she has 9 equity performers on that stage. Everybody wanted, as Fred said, everybody wanted to do Sweeney Todd. We have 9 equity members on the stage. The whole ensemble is stellar, really.
How big is the ensemble?
8.
What's
that? 8. think 8 or 10.
We've got. Shall I name them?
How can you have?
Yeah,
wait,
sure.
Nine equity performers.
Because they're all nine performers that are doing the leads, and then you have 8 others.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the whole collective ensemble.
Oh,
okay.
Gosh, so, I think 17. We're all together. We're 18 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. What were you saying, Michael?
No, but to say if I do a little shout out to those folks: Matt Steele, Alexander John, Devon Davidson, Kendra Munger, Chuck McCollum, Craig McElDowney, who is an amazing singer.
Yeah.
Mark
He's playing
Rohner,
the Beatle.
And the ensemble includes Antonio Ardolino, Michael D'Elia, Melinda Ehrlich, Marty Feldman.
Marty Feldman.
Yeah.
Yes, he's come back.
He's come back for this.
Yes.
Lena Goldwyn.
What hump?
Gwendolyn Hill, Rachel Hershey, Kelly Myersfield, and Hector Quintera, and Anibal Silvera.
Very good work, Michael.
Well done.
Yeah, getting through that. It's that time.
Yes,
we got
it
5 minutes left. We got to ask our guests about a performance mishap, something that went wrong.
This
or
is kind of a baptism.
A baptism, if you would. Fred, if you would like to start, do you have a tale of woe, a performance tale of woe to share?
The worst performance thing I ever had, it was a series called Tabitha. I had to play, I had one day on it, I was supposed to play a phony producer who was hitting on Tabitha's friend. It was in an outdoor restaurant scene. My call was 7 a.m. By about 4 o'clock, they got around to me, and it was the wintertime, so it was starting to get a little cold and dark. And the waiter had to come by. Tabitha had to give a wink to the waiter, and he was going to pour shrimp salad on my head. Well, very funny idea. He did it. He missed my head. He hit the shoulder. Big laughs because big flow. Oh, this will be in the takeout. They cleaned me off with just dry, did it again. About 5 or 6 takes, he couldn't hit my head with his shrimp salad. Finally, it was dark, almost just about dark, freezing. I was wearing a silk shirt. He got my head. It was all streaming down my head. The director said, "That's it. Let's move on." I was not in the next scene. They just left me sitting there. And the wardrobe person came up and said, "We don't have any water, but here's some dry towels to dry off." So I drove home with shrimp salad
in your hair. Wow. And of course, you
fishy.
Got home and you were followed by cats all the way.
I never thought. Oh, yeah, I would have been very paranoid, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
God,
don't you love that? Okay, we're done with you. Sorry about the whole shrimp salad in your hair.
He doesn't merit that. I'm telling you.
And what's yours?
Mine? Wonderful Town by Leonard Bernstein. And Why Oh Why Oh Why Oh, remember the very famous duet? And Ruth and Eileen are in a basement apartment. And so the set was built, so we're standing on the stage, but there's, you know, the set with a pretend, how do you say it in English, fenêtre, window. And people would walk, backstage, and you would see from the audience that people were walking back and forth, so it looked like a basement apartment. I'm taking forever to say this. And opening night, orchestra starts, and we start, why, oh, click, 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 with the dog. Dog raises its leg, starts to do its business, and then we hear crash. The set split in two.
What?
And began to come towards us. So I just turned, put my hand up, held the set up. They 86'd the dog, and I just finished holding up the set.
Oh, my God.
Why did I ever leave Ohio?
Well,
clearly, this is why, right?
What's the bit with the dog, though? I don't understand.
Because you're seeing people walk their dog, and the dog just happened to...
Okay, so the dog was supposed to be there, it just wasn't supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that's just what I held up the set, sang, and cleaned up the pee. That was it.
Jack of all trades.
Well, one more time. If you want to see Alice in England steal the show over at the Monroe Forum, it plays Friday, Saturday, Sunday evening.
And let's hope something goes wrong so we can see another outtake.
Yes, Fred will come, and he will actually read my biography once I write it, after I've married the 5th husband. Okay.
I'm going to bring my dog.
Yeah.
I'm going
to bring my dog.
The Monroe Forum Theater, 5269 Lancashire Boulevard, North Hollywood. For tickets, call 818-508-4200 or 866-811-4211 or visit the El Portal Theater. GrammyMuseum.com.
And for the Grammy Museum Presents Celebrity Autobiography, the Music Edition Volume 5, which is Wednesday night at 8 p.m. at the Grammy Museum, of course, located within that LA Live campus at the intersection of Olympic Boulevard and Figueroa. You can get tickets by calling 213-765-6803 or visit GrammyMuseum.org. And just as a reminder, of course, Mr. Fred Willard will be there, as we know, but also Pamela Adlon, Roger Bart, Kristen Johnson, Ralph Macchio, Lorraine Newman, Eugene Pack, Dale Riffle, Stephen Weber, and Debbie Harry.
Yes.
What a pleasure this has been, having both of you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
A great pleasure.
Thank you.
And Michael, always looking forward to sharing the microphone with you.
Same here, Paul. See you on the radio.
Listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.